Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is podcast number 222. This week we continue with our series of my Celtic life stories from former players, and St Anthony is joined by Danny Craney. For those of you not of St Anthony and I's ages, Danny came to the fore from the youth ranks of the club when Charlie Nicholas and Frank McGarvey broke their legs, and we were all hopeful that we had a conveyor belt of strikers who were would come through and put the ball in the back of the net. It didn't quite work out that way, as I said in some of the other ones, with players who've had to move on. These were the days when you won the league with 12, 14 players, and if you weren't one of the two strikers for the striking berth, your opportunities were limited. There certainly wasn't the squad rotation that you have these days. So Danny found himself in fourth place behind Melrose, McClair and McGarvey, and so moved on to Wolves, where he played 64 games, scored 4 goals, went out on loan to Blackpool, and then bobbed around various clubs, including trips down to Australia. Anyway, enough of my gibbering on. This is him, St Anthony, with him, Danny Craney.
Pleasure this afternoon to be joined by Danny Craney, the ex-Celtic player from the early 1980s, and we're just going to have a wee chat with Danny and go through his Celtic career. So as always, Danny, we start off any interview that we have on the website by asking, who was your first Celtic hero and what's the first Celtic game you remember attending?
Without a doubt, the hero's wee Jimmy. Just a fabulous, fabulous player. In fact, later in his career, he came and coached us at Celtic under 16s. I don't know why he bothered. He just kept the ball off us, and then he just got a kick of the ball. It was just getting nutmegged, and he wasn't getting us any coaching. He was just showing off that he was by far the best player I've ever seen at Celtic. I don't know if it's the first game, but the one that vividly sticks out in my mind is, I'm sure it was a game at Celtic Park against Falkirk. And the reason it sticks out in my mind is, I'm sure George Conlon came on at half time and done keep you up, he's around the park. It was a winter's day, and that really, really sticks out in my mind. I might be wrong saying it's Falkirk, but I'm sure it was. And that really sticks out in my memory, George Conlon keeping the ball up half time.
See, the thing about you is, like, you were a Celtic boy in a Celtic View.
Yes.
But I've seen that in every now and again, the Celtic View brings things up like that, and that must have been a big thrill. Who did you meet?
It's a funny story, and I've got the Celtic View there to back it up. There was me and two other wee guys. I was 6 at the time, 7, and it was great. My dad took me in the train from Croy into Queen Street, bus out to Celtic Park, and I just remember walking up through those big green metal doors and being met with the guy with the long green coat and the hat, and they ushered us into, I think it was a trophy room, and the chap that was doing it came in and says, who's your favourite player? The first guy says, Jimmy Johnson. Okay, who's your favourite player? Jimmy Johnson. And they came to me and I said, George Conlon. And the guy said, but George Conlon plays with the reserves. And I said, I know, but when the first team are away from home, I come and work the reserves. And he said, well, George Conlon's away with the reserves. Well, Jimmy Johnson, do you? I says, aye, I suppose so. So years later, I'm talking about the coaching at Celtic. Wee Jimmy come on and says, who's Danny Craney? George Conlon, a better player than me. And he had me around the throat, but it was good stuff. I picked George Conlon just because of the way he played the game. Just graceful. And
just to put the younger listeners in the picture, Celtic boy was a great thing. We all wanted to be Celtic boy in the days, because obviously you got to go to the game and you got to meet your favourite player. And this was a big thing long before the days like mascots and this kind of thing you get now and things like that. And you get your foot in the Celtic View. And I mean, there's tens of thousands as boys used to apply for that, and you know, try and get into it and missing a big
funny
thrill.
Stephen, it wasn't a case of applying for it. My dad's always, we always stood at the Rangers end, he always stood at the same barrier. I was always down the front where he could see me at the same piece. Obviously, Rangers games would be different. But he always left, no matter the score, my dad would always leave the ground 5 minutes early. Mm. And we got him over the old railway behind the Celtic end where the Crowe Celtic Sports Bus parked. And we're just walking through the throngs of crowd, and this guy just comes to excuse me. I said, my dad, would your boy like to be Celtic View? And that's how it happened. How lucky, bizarre it was. Just leaving the game, and this guy come up, and it was for the following home game. That's how it happened. There was
fantastic.
No applying for it then, just a touch of luck.
So, that'll bring us on to how you joined the ground staff. So, who were you with at the time when Celtic came in for you?
I was actually at Holy Cross Crowe, and I was just about to sign for Burnley. I'd been told that Aberdeen, Sunderland and Burnley had been interested in me. I'd been down at Burnley twice during the holidays, and Burnley would come up for my signature, and I was ready to sign. And I just...
What was your natural position?
At that time, I played middle of the park, midfield. But I could also play wide or through the middle. I thought myself as a midfield player, which probably was a wee bit silly, but... I was lucky enough, then I went to Burnley and I was ready to sign for him. And this phone call came out of the blue, saying that Celtic were interested, not to do nothing. And within 2 nights of that phone call, I'd signed an S-form. Sean Fallon came out to my house, of course I signed an S-form, and I joined Celtic's then under-16s.
So, but was Big Jock the manager then, just before Billy came in?
Yes, yes. Yeah, Big Jock was one.
So who would have been the ground staff boys in the days then? Who was your...
I went on to the ground staff. There was myself, Charlie Nicholas, a lad called Jerry Crawley, who went on to play for Clydebank, Hugh Ferry, nicknamed Shanty Ferry, and the last one to join us was Wally McStay. So it was 5 years on the ground staff at the time.
I've read a few interviews through the years. It sounds like good fun.
It was brilliant.
Much more so than now, I think, you know.
I know what the kids do now. They do nothing. They get... Whether it's right or wrong, they get coached, they get fed, they get coached, they get educated, they get coached. I think what we've done, sweeping the terrace and sweeping boots and looking up to players, it was a good breeding ground. It gave you respect for these guys. And these were the guys that you were hoping to get into that dressing room one day, but I'm led to believe that the kids are in the dressing rooms. And I'm not saying that you should go back to the old days of sweeping terraces and polishing boots, but it was a good way of getting relationships with players. I mean, I remember Johnny Doyle, God rest his soul. He wanted his boots shinier than anybody else. And if it wasn't shinier than Danny McGrain, he'd want to know why. And he'd throw them at you, get them shined. But he'd look after you at Christmas time.
So who was the characters in the dressing room in the days? Which one of the players was good with the kids?
Without a doubt, Johnny was a wee bit aggressive, but funny way. Tommy Burns, every Monday morning, Tommy Burns would come in and ask, how we got on at the weekend? Who played well? Every Monday morning. I'll never forget it, Tommy Burns. Danny McGrain was good as well. People like Roy Aitken, but Tommy always come out his way. Who played well? How did you play well? Even at that time, try to encourage you to think about the game. It was really, really good.
So when you hit the reserve team, that reserve team, I remember in those days used to read the Celtic View, and the first thing you would do is when you get Celtic View is how the reserves got on last week, and then you begin to see names emerge, and they would win 5-0 and Nicholas would get 3, and then the next week they would win 4-0 and Danny Craney get 2, and you know you would start talking to your Dan, your pals, and you would go, hey, they must be good players because they're scoring goals, and you would get wee reports coming through about how good Pat Bonner was in goals or you know that kind of thing. So that was quite a successful reserve team. You did a great unit at the time.
Aye, if you look back in that team, Stephen, I could bring off 7 or 8 who played for the first team and others went on to...
I'm sure you went a year without losing a game.
We went 18 months without losing a game.
18 months, much
isn't it? It was as long as that, and they again applied to the SFA, whatever it was, SPL, whatever it was, to try and get us into one of the lower divisions, and they knocked us back, because we were hammering teams, but the good thing about it was... Back in the days, if Celtic were playing at Easter Road, you played at Celtic Park.
That's right.
And there'd be 2,000 or 3,000 people there.
You know, I used to do that, but if my dad wasn't going to Aberdeen, you went to see...
Well, as I said earlier, if my dad couldn't take me to Pittodrie or that, we went and seen the Quality Street guy.
That's right.
So, we had Frank Connor and Jimmy Lumsden as our coaches. Frank Connor was great. If we were winning a game 4 or 5 nothing, the shout would come for the dugout, two touch. and the game became like a training session, how to control and pass him. And sometimes it would shout one touch, so that you weren't dribbling past people and
showboating.
Yes, and we went 18 months unbeaten.
Actually, I remember that clearly. So the quality begins to emerge. I mean, Pat Bonner ends up getting goals. Charlie made the breakthrough.
Mark Reid
was a good left back. John Weir began to come through, and you know that kind of thing.
Jim McInally.
John Halpin was a good player.
John Halpin, obviously Paul McStay.
So Paul was a wee bit younger, wasn't he? But he was.
They played in their team, but
that's the thing. Because he was so good, he got pushed forward.
He got pushed up.
So late 1981, the first time that I remember you coming to Spring to Light was when it went to Wembley for the five-a-side tournament. And in those days, like the English teams took it serious, and there was a lot of big name players. And Sports Night used to show the highlights. Don't sure, because you might not be aware of this because you were down there.
No, I've got a tape.
You got a tape. So I remember clearly watching that with my dad, and something funny happened at the beginning, and he showed Celtic first, and I thought, this is awful unusual. What did he show us first? And I remember saying to my dad, he says, I wonder if you're going to get the final here, because it showed your first two games, and you wouldn't be doing that if you get put out. So, I mean, it must have been a great thrill, because from memory, Man United had the likes of Brian Robson, Macari,
yes.
Steve Coppell.
Yes.
The Ipswich team would have had the likes of Alan Brazil and the Dutch guys.
Two Dutch guys.
And Southampton had, was it Keegan?
Keegan.
Alan Ball. So that's my point. They were taking it seriously, and I'm not saying we weren't, but the great faith in you boys at that time, because when they sent you down there, you know, I think Peter Latchford was maybe the only guy with any tremendous experience.
He was.
So there's big Peter, Willie Garner.
John Weir. Myself, Charlie Nick.
And Willie McStay.
Wee Jimmy Lumsden took us.
So,
I'll be honest, we battered. We won the first game against Watford 4-0. We beat Man United 2-0. We beat Ipswich 3-1. And we beat Southampton 1-0. I think Southampton battered us.
Aye.
Charlie Nicholas scored a
beautiful
curl goal. But at the end of the game, Keegan refused to shake hands.
Did he?
Aye.
That's disappointing.
He was that gutted that Kids had beat him.
He
just wanted off it. I'll never forget that.
I'm disappointed. I always looked up to Keegan. He was always one of the guys I admired.
And in the dressing room after the game, I don't know if you know Frank Worthington, the long hair.
Right.
Frank Worthington, he was at Leicester at the time. I think they'd been knocked out in the first round. He came in and chapped the door and come in and shook our hands.
Did he?
It's the best flip he's ever seen.
Well, do you know, there's a difference, but I was never a footballer to any great degree, but there's a difference between playing five-a-side and playing in a full park. And the thing that was noticeable that night was I'd very rarely seen guys, you were clearly used to playing five-a-sides.
Aye.
Because see the way you played one-twos off the boards,
yes.
And you were talking there about two-touch.
Aye.
And that's important, you're playing five-a-sides, right? And the movement off the ball, especially with you and Charlie, because you used to get most of the goals, right?
Aye. We ended up scoring top goal scorers, I think with 4 each or something.
So it was outstanding. The business just the fact we won, it was a quality of football, it was terrific.
Aye. You're talking about me and Charlie, mate. That's all me and Charlie ever did, was we just this understanding. We were pals on the pitch, best pals off the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I couldn't get a bus home sometimes. I would stay with Charlie up in the barracks in Maryhill with his mum and dad's. But if we played training in reserves, Frank Connor would never play me and Charlie together.
No?
No, he said we need two boys on the pitch. One for me and him and one for the others.
Mm-hmm.
So they always split us up, put Charlie in one team and me in the other team. But no, they were good days and had a good understanding with Charlie.
Well, as I said there, you could tell that you know, the way you played the five-a-side game, it was high class. I mean, some of these guys were like great professionals, but they weren't used to playing in that tight confined space. So time moves on a wee bit, and we're into 1982 now, and as I said, some of your pals are in the first team, and Charlie broke his leg, quite a bad one, kept him for a long while, and the squad was getting a wee bit tight, and Billy brought you in. Now, if I'm right, John Halpin had the first shot at it, but David Proven got injured in the right wing,
yes.
And he tried John. Now, John was very, very left-footed, and it didn't work out. The balance of the team wasn't quite right, and then you get a chance. And I remember you playing number 7 in the right wing.
Mm-hmm.
Were you left or right footed?
No, predominantly left footed.
Predominantly left, but you still could use your right.
Yes.
Because remember at the time when you came into the team, you were like, it's unusual, he's two footed. And it's clear that you were comfortable on both sides.
Aye.
And do you remember that the game, I think it may have been your full debut at Love Street?
Love Street was my full debut. I had come on previously at Celtic Park against Partick Thistle as a sub.
Mm-hmm.
Mick Conroy. 2-9 down, we come back to 2 each.
2 each.
My next game was away at Easter Road. I come on as a sub, in a game, we beat 1-0. I sent Frank McGarvey up in the last minute and blasted it over the bar. We beat 1-0 and I thought, what a start is this? And then we went to Hong Kong and I thought, I'll play here. And just like he says, the manager played John Halpin. And I thought, but then we come back the following week and I was going to Buchanan Street bus station with Jimmy Limbers, and he was going to Carton Tulloch, I was going to Kilside. And he said, listen, I shouldn't be telling you this, but I think you're playing tomorrow. And he told me about the boy that played right left back for it. I think it was Alec Beckett. He said, I think you're playing tomorrow. He said, don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, next Celtic Park, we reported the next day in Big Willie, said, you're playing, you're on to the start. I think we won 6-2.
But would you know something? 4-0 up after about 25 minutes. It was incredible.
Yes.
We blitzed them. Murdoch scored a brilliant volley.
Yeah.
And then again, you're talking about the two-touch stuff, the touch football and the movement off the ball that day was sensational. You and Dom Sullivan, Danny McGrain, had a cracking understanding on that right-hand side.
Yeah.
And then over on the left, the likes of Mark Reid, Tommy and George McCluskey doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And some of the quality goals that day were outstanding.
Well, I've looked back, so you see that, Stephen, the fifth goal, I think it is, Tommy Burns does a wee turn in his own half, shifts it to Danny McGrain, who plays it one touch back to him. Tommy lets it run through his body, plays it to me, we play a 1-2, plays it into George McCluskey, who plays it back to me, I plays it into Wee Murdo, who scores a goal. I think it was 5 or 6 one-touch passes. If you look back and see it, I've got it in VHS, it's a tremendous goal.
No, the whole performance that day was outstanding, and the thing is, that was a good St Mirren team.
Aye.
Imagine if we were playing Bolton with the league stuff. McAvaney was in there, Billy Stark. Doug Sumner, Billy Thompson. Some of these guys were international players at the time. Tony Fitzpatrick.
But
absolutely, you know, it's one of the things, I'll never forget that first half. Just that 20-25 minute period when the boys are just flying, and it's one of the days everything went right.
Mm-hmm.
So you were on the right wing at that point, and then ironically, Frank McGarvey breaks his leg. That was really, you talk about bad luck, to have one guy break his legs, one striker, quality striker, is unlucky. To have two of them happen within a space of weeks was devastating.
Mm-hmm.
And then Davey Proven got injured as well. So it actually came to a point where, again, my recollection is, Billy was finding it hard to get a team in the park because we were running out of bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Teams didn't have big squads then as they did now. So that's when there was a wee change. You come off the wing and get played through the centre with George.
I'm through the middle. No, it was with Tam McAdam.
Mm-hmm.
George had a slight injury as well, but my earliest recollection was that he put me up front for the Rangers game and I played up front with Tom McAdam.
That's true.
George was injured, but George come back in. George had a slight injury.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's a good
David
way
to come back into the right wing.
That's a good way to talk about the Rangers game then. Tell you a funny story about that one. My uncle was pally with Davey Proven. No, you're Davey Proven, the Rangers guy. And in those days, people might be surprised to hear that the main stand at Celtic Park was segregated.
No, that's right.
You know, it was like, if you went to the stand, you were expected to behave in a fashion. So it wasn't unusual to sit beside the Rangers fan. So my uncle and my cousin went with me and my dad, and he got tickets for the main stand right in the quite near the director's box, and it just got up the top of the stairway, and Tommy ran across, centre's just been taken, Tommy ran across the park and sent Dom Sullivan running down the right wing, and Dom's fluffed his cross, wasn't it the best cross?
No.
And Jim's, the ball was bobbling,
Tom McAdam missed it,
and as a goalkeeper went down, he sort of fumbled it, and you were perfectly at the back, and you just poked into the net.
It didn't hit the net.
Did they get that far?
Aye.
So talk us through that one, I've sort of spoiled it for you now.
Look, it was, I knew I was playing, obviously, but it was, I mean, I'd been to Hunters or Paul Firm games with my dad, but being in the pitch, you just couldn't hear nothing. I would say the Rangers game, I got taught a lesson for a player that put me in great stead for the rest of my career, Sandy Jardine. It's the first time I've heard people talk about being touch tight, but I didn't really know what they meant. And I'd feel Sandy up my back and the ball would be complete and I'd try to spin away. And he'd be 5 yards off me just waiting. The touch tight was he was touching my back, pretending he was right up against me.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I had a particularly good game that day, but I scored the goal, we won 2-1, and I get the best lesson in football ever. That's taught me an awful lot.
Because I've seen the game in DVD since, and I think we had 3 chances that day and scored 2 of them. Rangers actually played quite well.
They did.
But what should be remembered out of that is Nicholas has broke his leg, McGarvey's broke his leg, George McCluskey's out, somebody else was injured as well, I think Mike Conroy was injured. But Tom McAdam, who hadn't played up front for about three seasons.
That's right.
Really, Billy McNeil says it's an emergency. Yes. We don't have anybody else.
That's right.
You've got to go up there. He scores, you score. So the makeshift forwards, if you like, scored the goals.
Aye.
But, and Davy Moyes, I think, played at centre half.
He did.
He was only a big raw boy at the time. So the thing is, the other thing as well is, I'm sure Billy McNeil said afterwards, Danny McGrain and Davy Proven shouldn't have played that day. And the only reason that he allowed them to play was he'd no choice. He'd run out of players.
Aye.
And it says a lot for two guys that I think they were about 60% fit.
Aye.
And they put everything in it. And then you look at all the young boys and Big Tam get up front. And people talk about playing for the jersey. That team was a great example of how you know, like they were never beaten for effort.
Oh, without a doubt. As you said, I mean, it was just a makeshift team, but I remember being in the tunnel and David Proven says how much we're going to beat them by the day. That was
confident,
aye. At that time, if you look back, Celtic were really...
They had a good record against them, didn't they?
And they said our Rangers, aye. Proven was like that in the dressing room. How much we're going to beat them by the day, guys? 3-4, come on.
Mm-hmm.
A lot was a tight game. We went 2-0 up. Derek Johnson scored to make it 2-1. A bit shaky towards the end, but I think that went
a It was a windy day that day, I know.
Very sunny, but it was...
Remember, it was windy. It was like... when we were defending in the second half, Bonner could hardly get the ball to the area because it was blown right back at him.
Aye, very sunny day, quite strong swirl of wind.
So a couple of weeks later then, we go to Fir Hill, we're chasing the league title, Aberdeen are right down our throats, and you scored the hat-trick at Fir Hill. We get a 3-0 win against Thistle.
That's another game we got bars to.
Aye.
First half, if you look back in that, Morris Johnson hit the bar, Guy Watson who came for
Kenny
Rangers,
Watson
hit the post.
Mm-hmm.
They were all over us.
Mm-hmm.
And we come out the second half and I get the perfect hat trick, right foot, left foot and a header.
Mm-hmm.
But we were under pressure that day.
Mm-hmm.
And the 3-0 score does not tell the full story. If you go back and watch that game, Thistle should have been 2-3-0 up at half time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Big Bally doing his dinger at half time. We went out and started turning on the style. Don done his stuff again, and Tommy in particular opened them up a bit.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the streaker?
I didn't see the streaker, but I remember seeing it in Scotsport with the police with the two backs there.
Aye,
it was half time that happened. Really.
Some daft lassie ran in the park, so she didn't cheer the boys up, shall we say. But the thing about this period is Aberdeen went one of their mad runs. They won about 14 games in a row, and they were right down our throats. And anybody who supported Celtic at that time would be able to confirm that the St Mirren game in the last game of the season was a lot more tighter than we thought it was going to be. Because as I said, Aberdeen, to give them their credit, they're right down their throats. And from memory again, they had to win, I think it was 4-0 against Rangers at Pittodrie, which isn't obviously not an easy game. And we just needed to win by any result against St Mirren. So at half-time, we're drawing nothing each with St Mirren. And the score comes out of the tally that Aberdeen are 4-0 up, and I'll never forget the reaction of the fans. We were just absolutely devastated, and we thought we could really blow this here. This is horrendous. So would you have been aware of the half-time score in the dressing room?
I'm going to tell you a story. It's unbelievable. We were not aware of the score at Pittodrie, but we knew we weren't playing great. And we were no hanging on, but Big Billy was just trying to keep us calm, the goal will come, blah blah blah, and the bold Frank McGarvey comes hobbling in with his crutches shouting, Aberdeen are 4-0 up. And honestly, Billy McNeil grabbed him by the throat and nearly knocked him off his crutches and flung him out the door. And sure enough, that was it. We knew, by the crowd, we knew that. But again, Tommy Burns done his stuff that day, pulled up the defence.
Tommy was good that day.
McCluskey scored one of Tommy's passes, I think. Tam McAdam, a header at Dummings went in. And another one for, I think Tommy put George in again.
Mm-hmm. Almost identical to the first
one. Yes,
very similar.
He shifted for right to left.
That's right, and he just rolled it in the net.
Yeah. But it was a shame we didn't get to parade the trophy that day. You remember the fans?
Aye, there was an invasion, wasn't there?
We get presented with the cup in front of the dugouts, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Just at the dugout there, we lifted the cup up. We weren't allowed to do the lap because the fans came.
Danny was up on shoulders when the next day paper for
yes,
the photographs.
That's right.
And then we ran up the tunnel, but it was some relief that day. I mean, I'm speaking as a fan, and I was only young at the time, and you know, it must have been on the park, it must have been a bit sort of
aye,
hairy as well, because
it was a bit nerve-wracking, but I knew once we got the first goal, strange enough, McAvaney had a good chance in the first hands for St Mirren that day, and he kind of scuffed it into Big Packy's arms.
Mm-hmm.
He had a really good chance.
McAvaney, that was the days his He's ginger perm.
Oh yes, don't so touch that.
He'll not want to hear that.
But no, great. And my wee nephew's got the medal in a glass case down his house.
Mm-hmm. So the summer 82 comes and you've made your mark, and you would have been anticipating the next season coming and pushing on for there. But obviously Charlie comes back for his injury and McGarvey comes back for his injury. And it means we've, in essence, we've got four class forwards, but we've only got two places. And you didn't play much that following season.
And it was a bit disappointing to him because we went to Canada on a pre-season tour.
Mm.
And without bragging or being big-headed, I was by far the best striker playing. And Big Billy actually took me aside one night in the hotel and said, you're going to be my striker, because McGarvey still was struggling a bit, Charlie was struggling a bit, George had put on a wee bit of weight and was struggling. We got beat by a team of Italian waiters, 3-2, had scored two goals and I was the only one to get pass marks. And I thought, I'm going to be playing, and maybe he shouldn't have said that to me, because maybe as the pre-season went on I got a wee bit, and I didn't feature a lot that season.
Because there was a point we lost the league that season, and I spoke to David Proven about this. I know you and Charlie were close, but do you remember that the point just after the new year it became a real media circus around Charlie?
Aye.
And I definitely think that affected the team.
Yeah.
Because if you're running down the wing and putting the crosses in for him to score, and he's getting all this, you know, he's never out of nightclubs, he was on the St. Greaves' show every Saturday dinner time, he was on Sports C. Marks McPherson. I mean, like, when you talk about high profile, very few Celtic players have had a higher profile than he had at that time.
No,
without a doubt. UK wide, he wasn't just in Scotland, he was making the headlines down there as well. So I think that upset the balance of the team, and you know, as I said, you're banging in the door and you're not really getting a chance, and I think George McCluskey as well feels a wee bit aggrieved that he didn't get a run down again in the team. But it must have been hard for Billy, but 2-84 doesn't go.
Aye, I know.
4-82 rather.
Aye. As you said about Charlie, but I don't know what it was, probably David Beckham now, but I don't think people knew how to handle it or how to curtail it or how to...
And then he had an agent as well. Football was changing.
Legs, and I know. I think Charlie just swept away. Don't get me wrong. He took his chance. He's a young kid, you know.
That's right.
You know,
so 83 comes, Billy moves on, Charlie moves on, George McCluskey moves on. So at that point, you must have been thinking, this is a great opportunity for me.
I did. The guy who took over was David Hay.
David Hay.
And I don't agree with David no playing me, but I'll never have a bad word to say about David. From day one he came in, he told me he was looking to buy a couple of strikers.
Mm-hmm.
If I could prove him wrong, I'd be in his team. Mm-hmm. But he was looking to buy two strikers. And he did bring in two. He brought in Brian McClair, which is fair enough, and he brought in Jim Melrose. McClair I can accept, but I thought it was a better player than Jim.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. But Davey said no, that was going to be his strike force. I was on the bench a couple of times, come on that, but I played most.
Davey Hay's first game was at Fir Hill, funny enough, in a Glasgow Cup game, and you and Brian McClair scored.
I scored.
And it looked as if two of you scored.
Yes.
It was 2-0.
Sunday night, yeah.
And you looked, cranky summer's night, you looked as if you had the makings of a partner, something.
Yeah.
And that's why I was surprised when he did go running down to England to get Melrose.
Although I'm disappointed with Davey, I'll never hear a bad word about him. And he got me, when I went to Wales, he got me a few quid that I never thought I would get. But me and Brian never get the chance, and I thought, as you said, that could have been. I remember that night, was it 2-0, 2-1?
2-0.
2-0.
2-0. As I said, that was his first game. We played Rangers in the final on the Saturday, and we gave them a do, and they get beat 1-0.
I played in that, and I thought I played particularly well, and he took me off, and I think, did Melrose, was that Melrose?
That was his debut, he came on as a sub. I wouldn't have said it was for you, but if you're saying it was...
I think it was. I was pretty gutted, because... The Celtic game was under construction, wasn't it?
That's we were on the enclosure, the big enclosure.
I think Sandy Clark scored for them.
Mm-hmm.
But we played pretty well,
mm-hmm.
and I was surprised when he took me off and a wee bit angry. And that was it, hardly featured again.
Mm-hmm. So at what point did you realise that, what I'm trying to say is, in retrospect, do you wish you'd hung on a wee bit more? And because it wasn't a great period at that point. I think if you'd hung about, you definitely get a chance.
Maybe... Who knows, Steve? I mean, I made the move to Wolves. It was only for a month's loan. I absolutely loved it down there. Mm-hmm. And the players I was playing against.
Was Tommy Docherty the manager?
No.
No.
The guy who took me down there, the scout. It was funny, as I was saying about the reserves playing at home,
mm.
Sammy Chapman, the Wolves scout, came to watch David Moyes. Wolves were looking for a centre half. He came and watched David Moyes. We were playing Aberdeen at Celtic Park. We drew two each and I scored the two of them. And seemingly went away raving about me. And the Monday, David Hay after training says, I want you to come into the office. And Graeme Hawkins.
Hawkins, that's right.
And I went down for a month's loan. Absolutely loved it. They treated me like a king. The fans loved me. And when I come back up, it was still obvious that David wanted me to go. So I wasn't prepared to hang about. I wanted to play football. After getting the taste of the first team and then you're back playing the reserves.
It's a choker, isn't it?
It becomes, you can get into bad habits very easy, feeling sorry for yourself. You know, and I know I was going down there. It was the old English First Division, the Premiership. I've played against Liverpool, Man United, Notts Forest, Aston Villa, you know. So, no, I wish I had a better career at Celtic, but you've got to do what's right for your career at the time.
So after that, you became a bit of a wanderer, if you don't mind me saying that. You went for quite a few, I can't even recall, but can you...
Moved from Wolves, went to Blackpool in the month's loan, come back to Wolves, went to Australia for 5 years.
5 years?
5 years in Australia, playing there, come back, was 10 minutes away signing from Morton, and Airdrie came in and made a better bid. I think I upset, was it Alan McGraw? I'm sorry, I never promised him, but he always says to me, you said you'd sign for me. Airdrie made me a better bid and it was closer to Coastside.
Dundee?
From Airdrie to... Oh, hold on a minute, I went to Dundee.
I remember you being with Dundee for a wee spell.
Dundee, for about 6 weeks. That's right. I played against Celtic a summer's night. We nearly beat us. Nearly beat Celtic. I went to Dundee, that's right. Then I went to Australia. That's right. Dundee was in between Wolves and Australia. I went to Dundee for the last 6 weeks of the season.
And where did it finish?
Airdrie to Kilmarnock. Kilmarnock.
Tommy there at Kilmarnock?
Yes. Kilmarnock to Ballymena in Ireland, and then back to Kilmarnock, then to Ross County, and then Bowness Juniors.
What was the old saying, have boots while travel?
And then my coaching career kicked off.
So how did you go on in the coaching front? I know you were with Celtic for quite a while.
I loved it. I think it was me and Wally McStay, we were a really good partnership. Wally, he knew all about the defensive thing, and I would go in and show the strikers how to play close together, and the next thing is one up front then, always two up front. We really had a successful team at that time, and the players that come through there, you know, Birchall, Craney, Smith, you know, good careers. I really enjoyed it. Now down the level to work with the, like the satellite centres and your pro youths, and that was really good.
I think the advantage you had in your career was that there was more opportunities for boys, especially at Celtic. I mean, but when you think back, that you've already mentioned them all, the likes of Bonner, Nicholas, Paul McStay, Willie McStay, yourself, John Halton, John Beard, Jim Duffy. Yes. Jim Duffy, who technically never played a game for Celtic. He only played a couple of Glasgow Cup games, but what a player. Yeah. Imagine missing out on something like that. But there was a wee conveyor belt at that point. Whatever the scout network was, it was working.
Yeah, and it continued. You could go back to Jim Dobbin, forced his way through. Then you had Jim McAnally coming in, Luke Peter Grant coming in.
David Moyes.
You know, Big McGugan. You know, there's a lot of players who played first team football there.
But these days, I feel sorry for some of the boys, because if Celtic take in, I don't know, a group of 15 boys, then you're lucky if, in fact, lucky if one of them makes it. And it's a big percentage that drop out.
But if one does make it, see, McGeady paid for the youth development.
That's right, for years, you know? That's right.
I mean, Wee McGregor done the right thing. I had McGregor for he was 10, right through he was 14. He done the right thing and went and played for Notts County, played against men. I told McGeoch the same. He had to get out of playing that under 21 and scoring 4 or 5 goals. Go and play against men, get kicked, get pushed a bit. And hopefully McGregor's come back to shows that he can be a player. You've got the other young boy in midfield, you know, looks like he'll run through a brick wall for you.
Henderson.
So I think the new manager will give the kids a chance.
But would you agree that we've missed a trick in Scottish football by doing away with the reserve football?
Definitely, without a doubt. And I know the reasons they brought it up, but I think for clubs it would work great, because it gives senior players who are injured the chance to come back and get fit before getting flung into that again. And I would even go back, I know they're going on about the pitches need to be protecting that, I would go back to playing the home games at the home park. Because at Celtic Park, I mean, if Celtic are playing Motherwell at Fir Park and you're only getting, what, I don't know, 8,000 tickets or something, I'm sure you get 3,000 or 4,000 would turn up at Celtic, what's it, the kids?
Especially if you could even play on a Friday night or something like that.
Yes.
You know, do something, you know, come up with a new idea, do something different.
Because I don't think the under 21 rule thing is working, not for me anyway.
Mm.
As you say, how many kids are coming through, you know, they're not getting that opportunity to play against grown men who will give you a dunt if they need to, you know.
So what would have been the highlight then? Would have been the Rangers goal or the day we won the league or the hat-trick? You quite a few to choose for.
I would definitely say winning the league. Scoring against Rangers was brilliant, but I don't think I played particularly well that day. I always concern myself with how well I played. My best game for Celtic, without a doubt, we got beat with Aberdeen at Celtic Park.
Is that the one you skinned Big Rugby?
Rugby got took off after 62 minutes.
I remember that
Sir
one.
Sir Alex Ferguson.
Their goal was a fluke that day. It was a cross at
Stuart Kennedy
of the net.
Moved it from his right to his left and floated it to the back post in our big Packy's hands. George McCluskey missed a penalty.
So he did,
Remember Big Billy face to face with
Waddle.
He got sent off. And we played well that day, but that was my best game for Celtic. Again, we beat 1-0.
Did you think you suffered because you were quite versatile? You played in the wing, you played through the
centre. Right wing, left
you played
wing,
midfield as well.
I, people have said that in the past. Like, David Proben was a right winger.
That was it. He was always going to play.
David was a right winger.
Tam was left midfield. He was always going to play.
Aye. So I had a bit of flitting in between positions. Just to play,
And who would you say, out of them all, who was the best player to play with?
The best player I ever played with, without a doubt, was Danny McGrain. I mean, as I spoke earlier about Sandy Jardine, Danny McGrain's that good that he played left back for Scotland, so Sandy Jardine could play
right back. Right.
And that's me giving a compliment to both guys. But Danny McGrain taught you in the pitch things that you would never learn in 100 training sessions. Charlie Nick was, without doubt, the most skillful I ever played with. But Danny McGrain, for me, he played right back and he dictated the pace of the game from right back.
I've often tried to explain that to people as well. It's a crazy thing to see how you can run a game for right back.
Yeah, Danny would.
No, he would move into midfield and he could pass the ball better than any midfield player.
And the way Danny would pass the ball was never up here. Danny would, this way passing the ball, he didn't strike it into, he bent it so the pace would come off and then bounce. Go back and watch how many times Charlie Nicholas, it bounces, comes up to Charlie's stomach, it's down and he shifts, it goes left or right. Danny McGrain had bent it in. He very rarely struck the ball, Danny. If you go and watch, it's always. He played up to the throwing back and bent in. It's incredible the way he used to pass the ball. And Danny would get the ball off the keeper and dictate how quickly we played. People would say, what do you mean a fullback? But he did.
That's right. I remember clearly watching that at the time and trying to explain it to people now, it's mystifying. So it is. But, have you any regrets overall?
I'd like to say stayed at Celtic longer. When I walked through the doors as a coach, I appreciated it more than a player. Because I thought, you don't get a second chance, I've got a second chance coming back here. And I gave it my all, I think. I thought it was a wee bit chocolate when I was in the first team and that.
Well, that's natural at that age.
I know it is, but there was people warning you more than taking your side and saying, listen, this is what, and you think you're unbreakable. You know?
I'm sure I read somewhere you'd a nickname Puffer.
Puffer.
You're the only one that smoked in the team.
No, and I can't tell you, there's only about five or six people in those, Stephen, so. You find out.
Oh, so you weren't the only one?
Eh?
You weren't the only one?
No, I didn't smoke.
All right.
Only five or six people know why I was called Puff.
Well, I don't know. I'm sure somebody said it was somebody they were smoking. Very well.
People still call me Puff and they don't know why.
Oh, well.
Now they do smoke.
Well, that'll be a mystery then. We'll leave it at that. So, just to thank you for your time, Danny. That's been a great wee walk down memory lane there. You had a cracking career. And there's not many guys since you won a league medal for Celtic. Scored a hat trick, scored a goal against Rangers. So it was good stuff.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that, and certainly that discussion with St Anthony and Danny Creaney was more enjoyable than watching the game through the fingers of the Legia Warsaw Celtic game the other evening, or even last night as I'm recording this. So, not the best. There'll be some podcasts along soon if my guest confirms a recording time. I'll actually be recording another one tonight, and we'll be discussing that debacle and other things. So, enough from me. This is me, Harry Brady, saying thanks for listening and good night. Good night.